On a night when we saw Stevie show us his hungry eyes, Danny failed to do any dirty dancing, but we all had the time of our lives because at the end of the day, nobody put Suarez in the corner. It's the Day Trippers. On tonight's show, we're joined by Pod Deputant Dave Thomas, a.k.a. At Satrial80, and Niall Sheridan, a.k.a. At Green Scouser. We put forward our shouts for the lousiest left-wingers in our worst all-time 11 section. We celebrate the destruction of the blue shine at Anfield, even though Dancing Dan, the sky-pointing man, blamed his penal towards God. We look forward to visiting Pepe Mel Gibson and his West Brom boys, and we finish, as always, with listeners' questions. Okay, first up, we return to filling out our worst Liverpool 11s. That's the left-sided midfield tonight. So who are the most abhorrent left-sided players that you've ever witnessed in your time watching LFC? I have a feeling there's going to be one name dominating the discussion here, but I'm going to come to Paul on this first. Paul Brennan, what's your choice?
Well, my two shouts are, it's between Harry Kewell and Stuart Downing. Harry Kewell, obviously, he had the kind of horrible transfer where he kind of screwed Leeds out of all the money and came to us, and we thought it was going to be brilliant. And in fairness, he scored a few derby goals in his time, but overall, he was fairly awful. And the thing that really got me about him was he was crap all the time and he was injured all the time. But anytime we got to a cup final, he just declared him. In 2007, the Athens final, I forgot Kewell played for us until the fucking week before and he declared himself fit. And you're just kind of like, oh, Jesus, Harry Kewell, yeah.
Starting jersey, yeah.
Yeah, fuck off. Yeah. The other one, Downing. Like, jeez, with 19 million and no goals and no assists. that takes some doing. Like, you're Ron Burgundy. I'm not even mad. I'm impressed. Between the two... I'll go with Downing, actually, yeah.
You're going to go Downing. All right, the other new man in the room, what it would be your choice, Dave?
Well, you know, Downing's a great shout, but I decided to go a little bit left field because it's left wing.
Okay.
And, first of all, my observation is we've had fucking hundreds of terrible left wingers. I can't
there
remember
have been,
a great
yes,
left winger.
Very true.
So my shout is Milan Jovanovic.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And I tell you why. There's two reasons. One, every picture I fucking see of this guy, Roy Hodgson is in it. So
okay, that's a bad start.
That's enough of a reason not to like him. And secondly, he's so bad, I actually don't have a mental image of him ever playing for us. I actually can't picture him with the ball. I can't think of a single game that he played in. I can't think of a single cross or goal he ever did. He's just nothing. If he walked in here now, I don't think I'd know who he was.
Yeah.
That's how bad he was.
Yeah.
Milan Jovanovic, the worst left winger I've seen.
I kind of remember him. What did he do? He tried to do a diving header against Arsenal and kind of just hit the ball and his face into the ground at the same time or something. There's a YouTube video. You can look it up and it is brilliant.
I'm going to make a point of it. Okay, on the line then, Niall, could you give me your shout for worst left winger ever, please?
For worst winger, I've decided to go with Milan Jovanovic.
Oh, yeah.
I think it says a lot about the player when my only fond memory of him is that diving header against Arsenal.
Brilliant.
Apart from that, the only other thing I can think about Jovanovic is, I can't remember, was it Home and Away or Neighbours? But there was some episode anyway where he somehow got mentioned as one of the greatest soccer players in the world. Something along that line.
Brilliant.
So for that alone, I think Jovanovic deserves a mention.
Ah, oh, that's fantastic. Okay, on the other line, Moldy, your shout.
Before I give my shout, Les, I'll quickly go back to last week. I remember your show for right winger, Jimmy Carter, came up.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. The reason I bring him up is he was the first interview I did for Beyond the Cop, where we interviewed a few ex-players. And one of the questions I asked Jimmy was, what was your highlight of your Liverpool career? And he once won a Man of the Match award against Wimbledon. And he sent me on an image that he still owns the bottle of champagne from that Man of the Match award.
God bless him. God bless him.
I remember thinking at the time, how shit must your career be if you still own that
match? You're not bringing him on for a second interview then.
I'll be straight with you, Molly. I thought we were in trouble here for a minute. It's good to see you're digging. Go ahead, man. Go ahead.
No, but he was a top lad. But I remember that he saw me on the image. I was still on the bottle of champagne. I was thinking, oh my lord, you know. But the left back shout, the guy I'm going for is, I remember when you were linked to him, I was really excited about this link. I looked up YouTube, and this was before the days that YouTube made look every player look great. Mark Speedy Gonzalez.
Oh yeah, looks out, yeah.
He looked a cracking player. I mean, he used to go flying past defenders, scoring goals from ridiculous angles. And when we signed him, I think it was from Sociedad we signed him from, he looked a complete different player. Like, you know, he couldn't do anything. I remember during his debut, he fell over the ball at one stage. He tried to step over it with nowhere. You know what I mean? He was just hopeless. So he easily be my team. I was thinking of Downing, but really, in fairness to Downing, he was predominantly on the right, so that's the only reason he doesn't get on.
Okay.
So, left side, Mark Speedy Gonzalez for me.
Lovely stuff. Phil?
It's hard not to pick Downing because he's a complete fucking football ninja. I hate the bastard with a passion. But there is, like, the left wing is a veritable reservoir of utter shite that we've had through the years. Like, you've got just so many to pick from. You've got Zenden, who was just appalling. We've got listen, Diomed. You've Harry Kewell, as we said. We've had Jovanovic. Like, to actually pick that many shit left wingers is a skill in itself. I'm going with Downing. I don't care if he predominantly played in the right wing. The fucker came as a left winger, right? And he was garbage. He invented the word garbage for Stuart Downing, and long may he stay in the bin, in a Busker Brusker, and he doesn't come back out ever again. And somebody sets the bin on fire. Thank God we sent them packing fucking West Ham. But, honestly to God, I've nearly had breakdowns before matches when I've seen his name on the team sheet, and it couldn't even come close. People hate seeing Ali Sissoko's name and stuff on the team sheet. It doesn't even fucking come close to when Downing used to appear on the team sheet for me. Even the thoughts with now sets me to a point.
I can see you're starting to get to go there. Your head's starting to go.
The vein is coming out.
it's starting to wobble.
We need to address something, Phil. We need to address something, and that's something that we've discovered recently amongst ourselves, and that's the likeness and the sky pointing in that particular picture of Stuart. And I have to say, it's coloured my opinion of Stuart immensely. And if he wasn't a guaranteed shoe into the team, he's fucking in there now. Okay, right. Time to move on, I think, to our Liverpool versus Everton review. Now, I'm surrounded by a group of lads here who have openly admitted to flannel-esque excitement, pitching tents large enough to house marquee signings, as we watched the Ev take a punishing 4-0 pounding. Now, it was very arousing stuff. In the words of Maximus Decimus Meridius, were you not entertained? So, where do we even start? There are no end of talking points, I suppose, but we must start with the manager, whose selection tactics were pretty spot on. He's got a lot of criticism in the past, especially for the Villa game, but he must now get the equivalent amount of praise, surely, for that destruction of Everton. Made all the right moves, even down to taking Sturridge off at the time that he did take him off. So I'm just going to bring a few fellas in here now to get some responses to their thoughts on how Brendan managed the match. So, Phil, I'm going to start with you here for a quick idea on that.
Yeah, as critical as we were of Brendan after the Aston Villa game, for that 4-4-2 or 4-2-4 formation that he set up, I think he learned lessons from that game. He learned lessons from the Bournemouth game, when, again, that sort of system didn't really work, and he reverted to a more 4-3-3 setup, with Gerrard sitting and getting the legs of Coutinho in beside him and playing Coutinho in centre midfield was inspired, let's be honest about it. Like, I really credit just goes to him, because he outshone Martinez in terms of his tactical awareness to how Everton were going to come at us. He was happy to be controlling in the sense that they didn't have to dominate possession. They just basically allowed Everton play in front of them. Everton went side to side. They never went vertical, really. Their main threat was Kevin Morales, and we dealt with him more or less fairly well. And even like as much as Sissoko was maligned, he dealt with him well on the actual night as well. I have to say, I was just so pleased to see that tactical display come out of Rodgers. We've seen signs that he has that ability to adjust a team and change a team, and he isn't as dogmatic as maybe he was originally when he came to the club. But ultimately, he went back to his 4-3-3 formation with his one and his two, as he says, as he talks about. Coutinho maybe a little bit higher than Henderson, who was really the water carrier in the night.
Now, you've criticised his in-game management on a regular basis here, yep, on the pod. Tell me what was better about the other night, and was it just almost a result of the scoreline, or were they the right decisions, and why?
It's like, he didn't, like, okay, the in-game management part in a game where you're winning 4-0 after 60 minutes doesn't really come.
It's pretty easy, yeah.
His in-game management came before the game started in terms of the setup and his tactical setup that he actually did. He didn't need to change much because the game went exactly the way he wanted the game to pan out. When he was looking at that lineup and looking the way he set the team up, he thought, in his wildest dreams, he would say 4-0 at 60 minutes, and that's as good as a job as you're going to get done at that point in time. Like, down to the way our defence defended, to how we managed to get the best out of Steven Gerrard in that defensive midfield role by taking away the need for him to run in the actual match.
Okay, now we're going to come on to the nitty gritty of the midfield in a bit. But Niall, your take on Brendan and the way in which he managed the match.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with Phil there. I think one thing about Rodgers is he is developing as a manager. Even the way when he first came in, he was all about this death by football. That seems to have been transformed now. We've turned into a serious counter-attacking team. I think Rodgers deserves credit for that because, as Phil was saying, yesterday, I think I saw after the game, we had, I think it was 39% possession or something at home, but we still absolutely hammered them. Yeah. So I think Rodgers deserves great credit for this. And also, you can see Rodgers isn't a stupid man. You know, he knows he made mistakes against Aston Villa. He knew that at half-time against Villa. He brought on Lucas, and the second half was a completely different game.
Yeah.
So it's good to see how this team's developing before possibly the team picked itself yesterday due to injuries, but it's the way that the team was actually set up that impressed me most. So Rodgers definitely deserves huge credit for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dave, just one more response to Brendan and how he basically performed on the day.
Well, I got to be honest with you, I thought the criticism of the manager after the Villa game was a little over the top.
Okay.
You know, I think that one of the things about Brendan that people underestimate that is that he's quite a progressive manager. Mm. So one of the downsides of being a progressive manager is there's going to be times where you try things and it doesn't work, you know? And he's actually the opposite of what people accuse him of being, which is dogmatic and stubborn and, you know, arrogant and all this stuff. I actually think he's the complete opposite of that. What he tries to do is problem solve, and that doesn't always work. And against Villa, it didn't work, right? And it didn't work for 30 minutes. Okay, so for 30 minutes out of a season, he had a brain fart or something he was trying to do didn't work, right? Yeah. But to give him credit, he's persisted with, he hasn't just thrown that out the window and said, okay, you know, I'm never going to try that again, that was stupid. He stuck with it and he said, actually, you know, by changing one or two things, by bringing Coutinho into the middle, by making Henderson sit a little deeper next to, you know, next to Gerrard, by putting more emphasis on pressing from the front. I think if you look at the legs that, you know, the running that went on yesterday, even from someone like Sturridge, who perhaps isn't known for his work rate, I actually think that what he's done is not just learn, God, the system I did didn't work. It's more, how do I make small changes within that system to make it more effective? I don't think he gets the credit he deserves, you know, for making those small, subtle changes. Yeah. The Villa game, for me, it's 30 minutes of an aberration that, you know, different players are available. We don't lose that game. This game, he's gone, okay, you know, you went 2-on-1, not 2-on-1, but he had Suarez and Sturridge attacking Stones, targeted Stones, and said, okay, get after that guy. And he had Coutinho sitting on Barry, and Barry makes Everton play. And he had Coutinho, every time Barry got the ball, Coutinho kicked him.
Okay.
And it's just small things like that that he changed. I don't think he made drastic changes, but just small things. And I think it always makes me feel comfortable to have a manager that is smart enough to problem solve rather than simply abandoning something he tried and going to do something different.
Fair play. Paul, I'm just going to bring you in on this as well, but a slightly different take on it. One of the things that Brendan has changed recently is the role in which Stevie's been employed. To be fair to the kid, he had a tremendous match last night. I thought anyway, in terms even just of the effort and work rate, he seemed to be there, he seemed to be on the ball regularly, he seemed to be influencing how the game was being played. What was your take on Steven's performance on the night and on the midfield in general and how it worked?
Well, he just looked kind of like a player who realised that he hadn't been doing the job properly. Like everything, he was constantly looking around him. He made some brilliant interceptions. He got us going with some great passing. Just the spaces he took up when we had the ball and when we didn't have the ball, I thought were brilliant. Like there was one time, I think Mignolet had the ball, and Barkley and Lukaku were sitting in front of Gerrard, and Mignolet is obviously, that's the one he's looking for, Gerrard. So Gerrard just dropped back into the 18-yard box and told him to hit it to Flanagan. And once they did, Lukaku and Barkley turned, and Gerrard just sprinted in between them, took the ball off Flanagan and hit a brilliant first-time ball out to Sissoko.
Yeah.
And it's just the sort of stuff that he wasn't doing against Villa, where he looked kind of overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I just thought he looked like he kind of knew his role a lot better.
Yeah.
And it was helped as well with the way the midfield was set up, with Henderson and Coutinho beside him too.
And those crazy eyes are the crazy eyes of Matt. who knows he's got it right? And Jesus, it fucking mattered, didn't it?
You know, that was one of the best things about the match, celebration. It was absolutely brilliant to see.
And what about the rest of the rest of the midfield, the way it lined up? I'm going to bring you in on Coutinho here, and I'm going to ask Molly then to chip in on his opinions on Coutinho. So
Coutinho again, he looked like a player that had been spoken to by Rodgers. Like he wasn't looking for killer passes all the time.
Yeah.
Instead of the last couple of months, maybe he's kind of interrupted the flow of our passing.
Mm.
Whereas this time, I think he really added to how fluid we were when we had the ball. His carrying of the ball, he was always available for pass. He was involved in goals, he was involved in plenty of moves, whereas in the past few weeks he's looked kind of shorn of confidence, and he's just forcing absolutely everything.
Hmm.
And I think his defensive work as well was brilliant.
Yeah, sure. Dave, sorry, you want to say something?
I mean, one small point on the Coutinho thing and on Gerrard actually is, anytime someone again says Gerrard should play as a number 10 or as forward in the front three,
mm.
they should watch that game yesterday and watch the run-in that Coutinho did and Sterling did and Sturridge did. Because as fantastic a player as Gerrard is, he doesn't have the legs to do that for even half, you know, even 45 minutes.
I could give you a counter-argument for that one.
Go ahead.
Because, again, if you put Gerrard in a 10, you change your shape, as opposed to playing the way we do, where you have two sort of real runners that play alongside a defensive mid. You'd need to change it to a more 4-2-3-1 where Gerrard can float into 10 and not have to do the running that say Coutinho and Henderson does. There's an argument that we're losing out an awful lot in his goals and his creativity by having him where he is. And when you put him where he is, you need to have two really energetic midfielders beside him. And that's where the unit was flawed with Lucas and himself alongside, because the mobility wasn't there. And I've said that from the start of the season. I think every time he's played in that role with two energetic midfielders beside him, he's looked like he's capable of playing that role. I go back to the time he played there with Alan and Henderson against West Ham.
Yeah.
Again, he excelled in that role. But again, he had Alan and Henderson to do the pressing, to do the running, that just let him to go from side to side, block off the things, and he was making phenomenal blocks on the edge of the 18-yard box. So I think if he's going to play there, we have to have the facilitators, which are the players with legs around him, and that can be Coutinho, Henderson and Alan at this point in time.
Yeah.
Molly, your response to how Stevie performed on the day and Coutinho as well?
Oh, Steven Gerrard last night, he played what I like to call the Gandalf role absolutely perfectly. You know, it's just a Dauchen-like pass type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
He was busting a gush to catch up with players. He was blocking. There was some crunching tackles. He was fabulous last night. The only worry I'd have was because it was Everton. You know, you could see after he scored the goal with the bulging eyes how much up for that game he was.
Yeah.
My only worry is, will he be the same against West Brom on Sunday? You know, so it's one of those to be continued type of ones. Mm. But last night, I thought he was absolutely brilliant. He really was.
Yeah, to be fair, I think history has shown us that could well be the case, that fear that you have. But at the risk of annoying any listeners, we'll just move along from there. Paul just wants to come in here for a second, Molly, on that. Sorry, go ahead, Paul.
I agree with Molly that it is going to be different against West Ham, because I'm not sure if you can set up as defensively. I don't know if the players will be as receptive, because it was the players around Gerrard as well. If you start telling them that we're going against West Brom and we're going to be sitting back near our own 18-yard box. Gerrard played great in his own right, but it was because the team was deep as well, I thought, and then looked to spring on the counter-attack.
That's fair enough. And Molly, your thoughts on Coutinho and how he did on the day in his adjusted role?
Well, with Coutinho last time, I think what it showed is he's not a left-winger. He really isn't. I think Coutinho is a number 10. That's his role, and that's where he should play every single game that he starts. You know, I was watching there last night. He was coming deep into midfield, getting the ball, starting attacks, always had his head up, always looking for that killer pass, you know. He's wasted out in the wing, in my eyes. He really is, because he has to cut in all the time. He's always trying to go into that middle anyway. So I said, leave him in number 10. Leave him behind those forwards. Leave him doing the killer passes. you know, that's his role for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, Phil, go ahead.
I think there was mention at after the game that maybe Henderson didn't have a great game. I thought Henderson, in terms of what he actually brought to the team there last night, we rave about Coutinho's role because we weren't expecting to see him play that way. But Henderson was our version of a Deschamps in terms of that he linked what Gerrard was doing well in terms of blocking off in a defensive five to becoming part of the attacking five, and he really shuttled between the two. Coutinho played that little bit higher, still as part of that two in front of Gerrard, but played that little bit higher and was always receptive. But you'll always see that it was almost Henderson forcing and pressing that was forcing the mistake that allowed, say, Coutinho then to get on the next ball, which then allowed the ball to break. And I know we're going to come on to the attacking three, but he's for me, tactically, the role that Henderson played last night was so imperative to the way we actually played. Mm-hmm. It just allowed us to do the next phase. He may not have been the one that was causing, doing the passes or making the blocks or whatever, but he allowed the other two in that midfield to go and do their jobs and excel at their actual jobs itself. Mm-hmm. So, like, we have to realise that we've seen Henderson emerge this season as a proper talent in the Premiership.
Yeah.
World class gets bandied around way too often and too easily, but we really have seen the emergence of a player. And if somebody came in tomorrow and wanted to sign Jordan Henderson, would he go for 16 million? Fucking right he would, because he's that level of player. Mm. The idea now of Jordan Henderson as a £20 million player, it's not that ridiculous anymore.
Mm. I think on Henderson as well, there's been games this season where he's had phenomenal games on the ball.
Yeah.
What he had last night was a phenomenal game off the ball.
Yeah,
right?
That's fair, yeah.
He didn't play the pass, but he drags men away, he presses, he forces them into the mistake, and he was everywhere. Every time I turned around, there's Henderson. So he might not have been great on the ball last night, but there was enough players who were great on the ball last night. He was great off the ball last night.
Absolutely. Niall, would you concur with that? It was almost nice to see Henderson having not an acclaimed match, because basically he was doing an awful lot of stuff that is unsexy but very, very vital to the team.
Absolutely. He was brilliant last night, Henderson, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Also, it's interesting to see the way he's been able to adapt his game. Earlier on in the season, everyone was talking about how Henderson and Suarez have struck up a great partnership when Henderson was playing in that number 10 role. And I think it says a lot about Henderson, the way he moved back into a deeper position last night, but he was still as effective, in obviously in a different way.
Mm.
Just shows how important he's become in this team. And as Phil was saying there, I wouldn't sell Henderson for 20 million in the morning, because it's very hard to find a player like him. What English player, for example, would you take at this moment instead of Jordan Henderson? I think it's hard to pick one.
Mm.
So again, credit has to go for Rodgers for the way Henderson has developed this season.
Yeah, absolutely. For a lad who's nearly on his way out, it's quite remarkable. Paul?
He's like, two of his best performances were Spurs away, where like it was his forward running, it was really direct, he really caused him a lot of kind of obvious problems. Whereas yesterday it was the way he backed up the play, the way he got back and helped Gerrard, the way he got out to the left and helped Sissoko as well.
Yeah.
He just did everything. Like, it's one of them where you have to look for what he was doing, but it was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, that's a rounded footballer right there, then, basically, exactly, from what you're saying.
Yeah.
Niall, can I keep you on the line here? We'll just move it slightly forward up the pitch now and have a look at Sturridge and Suarez and Sterling, our SSS attacking lineup. Let's just take them one by one and go through them. And how did you feel that worked as a unit?
Well, it worked very well, didn't it? I'm going to start off with Sterling. I think I've been really impressed with Sterling this season.
Mm.
He's come on heaps and bounds. I was saying the other day, I really think Sterling can go on to be probably a 10 to 15 goal a season wide man.
Mm.
His running off the ball is exceptional for someone so young.
Mm.
You have to remember, he's only 19 years old, but his performances recently have been absolutely outstanding for a man of his age playing in it. You know, big pressure games against Spurs, he was brilliant. Against Everton again last night, he was very good. I think also it's worth noting the way Sterling, he's developing into a totally different type of player than the one we probably expected him to turn into.
Yeah.
When he was with the youth side, it was all about Sterling getting on the ball, dribbling by three or four players. But he's adapted his game now, whereas now he looks to knock the ball off and run in behind.
Yeah.
So it shows his maturity as a player again.
Yeah.
Suarez is Suarez, really. You know, what can I say that hasn't been said about him already?
Niall, talk to me about the goal. Talk to me about that bloody goal, because I was writing something earlier on today and I was basically saying that that's the kind of goal that gets you noticed for awards when it comes to awards season. I mean, the idea of carrying it from your own half and just coolly punting away, very Messi-esque. Tell me about that. Talk to me about that.
Unbelievable, wasn't it? I actually, when I was watching the game live, I didn't expect them when he picked up the ball in the halfway line, I expect Jagielka to bring him down, because Suarez really isn't known for his pace. But then as he was getting closer and closer to the goal, that's when we all began to stand up, and then the finish was outstanding, wasn't it, on the left foot?
Yeah.
I loved the way as well, for the celebration, it took the rest of the players about 15 seconds to get down to Suarez. He was celebrating on his own.
Yeah, absolutely. That tells you a lot about...
And I was hoping we'd get one of those Chelsea moments. Remember when he turned around and was nobody celebrating? That's one of the best ever.
I was half expecting Pepperina to come out of the crowd.
Consolation hug. What about Daniel Sturridge, man the match on the night, despite BT wanting to focus on everything else except his wonderful goals? What did you think of how he's developing as a Liverpool striker?
Sturridge for me has been absolutely brilliant this season. I said last week, it's controversial, but I think Sturridge, honestly, has been as good for us as Torres was. When you take into consideration how much he cost, where he came from, he didn't have the reputation before, but his goal-scoring record is absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah,
he's much better. In fairness, I had my doubts about Sturridge. I've said it enough times. I wasn't really sure about him, but he's a far better footballer than I ever thought he was. He's an all-round striker, really, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think something that doesn't get noticed is his hold-up play. It's second to none, the way he backs into defenders. And then he was talking before, I remember he was saying Rivaldo was one of his idols growing up. And you can see he's taken bits of Rivaldo's game, especially the way he does like to roll his foot over the top of the wall and drag it back. And the amount of fouls he dragged off the Everton defenders last night because of that was exceptional.
Yeah, absolutely. Dave Thomas, talk to me about the goals themselves specifically. How impressive was that second one in particular?
Well, do you know, in a lot of ways, I think the first one's harder.
Yeah,
right?
It is.
Because
he's
got a lot of time there, right? And Howard comes out pretty quickly. And I don't think there's a lot of strikers that go in on there and you go, he'll definitely score.
Mm.
But with Sturridge, I was like, he'll definitely score.
Yeah.
You know, there's no doubt he's going to score that, right? And then the second goal, do you know what? In general, not enough people are talking about Daniel Sturridge.
No.
Not enough people in the media are talking about how good this kid is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if Luis Suarez didn't play for Liverpool, this guy would be on the shortlist for player of the year.
Yeah.
There is no doubt about that. He is phenomenal. And the second goal, I mean, to watch it in slow motion is actually a thing of beauty. To watch the ball coming over his head, he looks at Howard to see Howard's stupid face running out towards him. And Sturridge doesn't even look. He's only looked at the keeper once.
Yeah.
He looks at the keeper once, he knows where the ball is, and he puts it in the top corner. And it's probably the best celebration of the night, where he just stands in front of the Everton fans. And his quote afterwards, where they were like, why didn't you do the dance? And he's like, well, sometimes, you know, you just got to look at the Everton fans and let them know what time it is. Like, the guy is a fucking legend.
Yes. Phil, Danny Sturridge, tell me things.
He's a wonderful man.
Yes, he is a wonderful man.
He points to the sky incredibly well.
No, he does point to the sky. That used to wind you up. Now you love it. Is that right?
No, it still drives me fucking mental. But sure, if he wants to score goals like that, he can point to every piece of sky he wants to. And I'll join in with him.
Yeah. He even threw on got on his knees and prayed. He even threw that in for you, Phil.
Listen, he can come on his ceremonial robes.
I think even if you look at his lips, I think he even said, that's for you, Phil.
That's what started with Downing. Now the Sturridge. Wow. Where do you start with the guy? Like, he's only back, when you think about it, since the Stoke game. And he comes back, and James made the point a couple of weeks ago. He comes back, and it's like he was never out of the side at all.
Mm.
He hits the ground scoring goals from that point on against Stoke. He scored the goal again against Bournemouth. He comes in, he makes it look so easy. As a threesome, everyone talks about the Suarez Sturridge partnership, right? But the way the three of those players work and move around with each other, it's phenomenal. I don't think, I'd love to be corrected, but in terms of having a natural nine in a team with a world-class phenomenal footballer, because Suarez is not just a 10, a 9,
he's
a
not
7.
A number. He's just
Suarez, yeah. You know? Yeah. And then Sterling, because what Sterling does is he gives width on those attacks. We're talking about that we play with the two on the one in the midfield, but he goes to either flanks he figures out the player that he's playing against. One of the most, as Dave said earlier on, he's become such an intelligent young player, right? He goes up against the fullback, figures out how to do the fullback, and then has a field day against him. Mm-hmm. And I think the disappointment and the poor form that he's come back from has made him twice the player he was. And we talked about Coutinho going through the same type of spell, and maybe the little change in position, because again, Sterling went through three or four changes in position till he found that, well, this is my position and this is where I want to play. Maybe Coutinho similarly has taught himself, well, actually, do you know what, I want to be in the centre of what's going on here. I can do this, the hurrying and the pressing that Alan can do. I just look at Sturridge down and you just say to yourself, Christ, how long is it since we've had two top class centre forwards? One in the top three in the world, and then one that's just outside them in the next bracket down, that every time he gets on the ball you think he's going to score. I suppose, coming on to the point about when missing the penalty, I remember when I used to play myself, and I'd say to our centre forwards, look, if you're going to miss, don't have the goalkeeper save it. Go high, and if it goes over, it goes over. Because the one place a goalkeeper won't save a penalty is high on the top of the net. And he went down the middle, and he went high. I could see what he was trying to do, right? But sometimes you can't force hat-tricks. There's always a sense of karma to what went on. And possibly it's funnier because Everton don't get there. Well, it wasn't a penalty, was it? And like it's a talking point in the derby. It doesn't happen. Nobody got sent off. The penalty doesn't count. So they just got bummed basically by fucking what went on, and it's perfect that way. You know what I mean? Like there is no comeback on this one. There's no the referee hasn't changed the shape of the game. Nothing has happened. They've just ended up being done left, right, and centre by world class players and brilliance, and a manager who's finding his feet as a top level manager.
And the thing about Sturridge missing the penalty is, he's the type of player that needs his wings clipped every now and again. Yeah. So if he scores a hat-trick in the derby and he goes off standard ovation, there is a possibility, I don't think it happens that often to be honest with you, there's a possibility he might just drop off 1%, he might just drop off 2%, but instead he misses the penalty, he's got his head in his hands, the manager holds him off, you know, he's angry at that, yeah. So now he's going to be wound up against West Brom and he's going to want to go and score a hat-trick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he took it after the match, he kind of apologised, said that, like, you know, especially, you know, when he got through as well, he should have put it back to Coutinho as well, but he was looking for his hat-trick as well. And then straight away Rodgers hauled him off. So, and he took it really well, he came across really well in the post-match interview as well.
Yeah, but Rodgers also got to basically say, you know, I'm the boss, and he knows what he did wrong, and he's a good boy, and he's you know, he's spoken and to the exactly team. Yeah. You know,
I'd hold my hands up and say, when we signed him, I was fucking going, why are we signing him and not signing somebody else?
Me too, yeah.
No, look, straight up.
I think most people.
I think that's going to be a theme for today.
but people bought into the arrogance thing. Molly, on Daniel Sturridge, how do you feel he's been doing so far? And more to the point, what do you think he can continue to bring? Is this a guy who's going to be, you know, remembered here?
He looks every game like he's going to score, doesn't he? You know,
yeah.
Every single time. I think he scored the last three or four games running, and even before he was injured, he went on another run of scoring a goal a game for about three or four games. It's his composure and confidence that really impresses me.
Yeah.
Like last night, his first goal there, as you said, it was 1-1 goalkeeper. Some forwards would, you know, hit that straight at goalie, put a wide over. No, it didn't faze him one bit. I'm just going to slot it inside net, and that's it. You know, he looks a really confident striker at the moment, and I think he'll go on to score 20 plus this season, I reckon.
Yeah. Niall, would it be fair to say that, like the rest of us, you weren't really arsed about him throwing a little bit of a hissy fit coming off? That, if anything, that's not something that bothers us. In fact, we kind of almost like to see it.
Yeah, I think too much has been made out of it, to be honest. I think it's just because it's Daniel Sturridge, and he kind of has this thing about him where he's supposed to be this spoiled brat, but no, I wouldn't pass too much heat on it. I think that's a good point that was made earlier about it could be a blessing in disguise that Sturridge did miss the penalty and was taken off, because West Brom's back four won't fancy facing them. They've already let him three tonight, by the way, so it's looking good for next week.
Very good, very good. Okay, well, I suppose we should move it along then to the defence. Whisper it, but we seem pretty solid. Skirtle got his new stapley skull going. He was wearing a nice head condom. His brain seems to have stayed in between his ears. Flannel was solid, if you'll pardon the pun. Colo was respectable. Look, it was pretty good. Even those slagging off Ali Sissoko, to be fair to the guy, he was, you know, passable in defence, even though he does look like he's going to fall over at any given moment. And I wouldn't even trust him to bring me a cup of tea from the other room. But that said, look, he's a harmless poor old bastard, and you know, he's slightly functional. Can I keep you on the line there, Niall, and ask you what your thoughts were on how the defence worked?
Yeah, they were very good, much improved since previous performances. I thought Flanagan was brilliant, and it's a great testament to Flanagan. When you think back a couple of months ago when he was named in starting 11 against Arsenal, people were freaking out.
Yeah.
But ever since then, he's been possibly our most consistent player outside the likes of Suarez and Sturridge. He's been brilliant. And he's back in his old right-back position last night. But even before that, he's probably, at the moment, I'd argue, probably our best left-back and right-back. We have a bit of a Philip Lahm, I think, in Flanagan here.
Not building him up at all there. And what about the two in the centre?
Yes, I think Skirtle was very good last night, actually. I'm not Skirtle's biggest fan, but he didn't really put a foot wrong.
Yeah.
Tora as well, you know, they were nice and solid. Good, two clean sheets in a row now, so hopefully they'll take a bit of confidence out of that. And I think you could see as well, Mignolet looked a lot more comfortable last night, because all this chopping and changing, I think, has affected his form over recent weeks. But he looked something back to his best last night as well. So overall, I think the defence can be very pleased with their performance.
I think so. Molly, your own thoughts on the central two particularly and how they went?
I thought Skirtle was very good last night, but to be honest, I've been a fan of Skirtle for a while now, and I've not said it on the day trippers a few times. Mm. I think he's been impressive this season. I know, look, he's capable of pulling a few shorts and so on, but he's been solid this year in the back, I think.
Yeah.
You know, Torre, he did a job last night. There was no frills about him, but he was solid enough again last night. As you said, the two full-backs, Sissoko, he just looks like he's happy that he's playing for Liverpool, really, doesn't he?
He
doesn't deserve the criticism he gets, but every time we see him, he's smiling. He's just delighted to be on the pitch, really. For me, Flanagan, that should be his spot now, that right back or the left back. He should be guaranteed a game every single week.
Yeah. Are you basically saying then that he's a starter when he's fit, that's it? And if he is.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, Flanagan's a starter. Whether that's going to be on the right or the left, you know, even at this stage I'd have him in front of Johnson. I know Johnson had a few injuries previously, and maybe that's why his form wasn't the best. But even when Johnson was fully fit, maybe you're looking in the last season, he still wasn't that impressive.
Mm.
As far as I'm concerned, Flanagan should be either a right back or a left back.
Yeah, I think Flanagan and the craziness of Enrique is a very exciting idea indeed. Phil?
Yes, it was a good defensive performance, and I was delighted with the defensive performances, because again, it's a clean sheet, it's a big game, it's another clean sheet the lads put up on the board. You get a bit of confidence as you put clean sheets on, they become easier things to get as opposed to what you had before. My only caution on it would be that, you know, with the style of play that we played last night, it suits Skirtle because he doesn't have to push out. He's comfortable defending deep. That's the type of defender that Rafa signed him as, a person who's able to defend the 18-yard line, is comfortable being in a compact space. It doesn't allow players to get a run on him. There's people to cover around him when what's going on. It suited Gerrard that he didn't have to do much more running because they were able to sit there, nick it, play it, and go on the counter. And similarly, you could possibly say for Colo, it suited him as well because, again, he didn't have to go chasing balls, pushing up, worry about players getting in behind him. The early loss of Lukaku was a huge changing moment in the game for them, because when Naismith comes in, he's not the same physical presence. The fear isn't there in the likes of...
Well, he is. He's shite now.
He's Everton's version of Dirk Hout. Just a downgraded shite player, basically.
Dirk Hout without the goals.
And the big goals as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, you know, it was a game that suited him because of the injury to Lukaku. Maybe it could have been a different start. And look, to be honest with you, at 1-0, Morales has a great chance, and there's a good save by Mignolet from it, right? I thought Morales was the standout player for Everton. Of all the Everton players, even when they were 4-0 down, he looked like if they were going to do anything, it was going to come through him. And he was skipping by our defenders, you know, for fun at times.
For fun.
And that would be where my caution would come from. Great to see another clean sheet, but they did get chances, and we did allow them to get chances on us.
Yeah, no, I come in behind you. I thought Morales absolutely just led us a merry dance. I thought he was just, he could do what he wants. I mean, he's a horrible, horrible individual.
Yeah, he's a snide bat. Oh. But that's what you want if you were an Everton fan in the derby. Someone who kept going, like, whereas all the rest of the heads were dropping, really. Barkley, obviously, he was coming back.
Welcome to 2014.
I was just going to say, Barkley kind of kept plugging away for as long as he could. Like, yeah. he wasn't fit, but Morales was like their one player who kind of kept going. I slagged the shit out of him on Twitter over, you know, when he had the kind of hissy fit of Kelly, and Kelly just completely ignored him. I thought it was hilarious, but at least from an Everton point of view, at least he looked like he gave a shite. Like, so.
Saying that, like, I have to say, if you were to, he'd be the one, himself and Lukaku are probably the two Everton players that I'd love to see in a Liverpool jersey. Mm. I like snidey bastards. I like players like him. Winds up the opposition and fucking just wrecks their head.
Yeah, we haven't had enough of them, have we?
No, it's the type of player that we're missing from this world.
I was led to believe Aspas was like that. I was hoping he'd be a proper, little niggly prick. Like, you know,
I'll say one thing about Aspas when he was in Spain. He was snidey in terms of what he was doing.
He elbowed someone in the face in their most important game of the season or something, didn't he? So I was hoping more for more of that, really.
Where's that guy? I want that guy. Yeah, Phil, before we go off away from the defence, tell me a couple of things very briefly as our resident net-minding expert on Mignolet. I don't mind saying he worried me a little bit.
The same issues with Mignolet remain. It's a style thing. There was a couple of times he should have come for balls, which he didn't come for. He lets the defence drop too deep on top of him. But look, there's something, we will deal with that at a later point.
Very nice, kind of completely ignoring my question. Beautifully done. And with about the subtlety of a sledgehammer. Can we then just go on to your last point then, seeing as you're calling the shots here?
The coup is complete.
Control freak.
The age of Casey begins.
Jesus, let me out. You wanted to talk about Michael Owen, because he really, really, he makes you happy.
Oh, what a cunt. Basically, like, the fucker, he needs to just fuck off. Him, like, right, he can just fuck off.
Will you tell us what you really think, will you?
What I liked about that was fuck off Michael Owen, and I think that that's pretty much sums it up. But Dave Thomas, would you concur with Mr. Casey's ire there?
Well, I think it's difficult to disagree with Mr. Casey on this topic, actually. But,
probably a good idea.
I mean, you know, Michael Owen, he's just dull. You know, he doesn't really make me angry. He's more just... pointless. Yeah. First of all, he doesn't understand his role. He doesn't understand the difference between a commentator and a co-commentator. So he's not there to describe the action. He's there to comment and give insight into the game, which he can't do. So he says things like, oh, he's running down the left wing there and he's put across it. Well, we fucking know that. We can see that, twat. What we want to know is, if you were a striker, what would you be expecting that guy to do?
There's no insight from the kid.
There's no insight. Yeah, yeah. He's just vanilla. You know, he's so bad that his Twitter profile looks like a parody of what his Twitter profile would be. If you read his Twitter profile and didn't know it was actually him, you'd say, someone has designed a Twitter profile called Boring Michael Owen. And that's what it is.
Yeah, this is pretty brilliant. Okay, right then.
And it's monotone, fucking arse wizardry.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's move on to our preview of West Brom versus Liverpool on Sunday coming then. Given the injuries, are we going into this game with the same 11? Are we hoping to see Alan come in? Are we going to approach it in the same style as we did the previous match? Are we going to see Phil Coutinho in the same role? Molly, will you start the ball rolling here with what you would expect to see in terms of... I know there are things we can't predict, but basically what you would expect to see.
Well, you got to expect to see the same starting lineup, really, don't you? Not only because of, you know, the one last night, but we just don't have anyone else, really, do we? That is it, really. On the bench, we don't have anybody else. So I'd expect to see the same starting lineup. I'd expect us to see us play slightly differently because we're not going to let West Brom come on to us like Everton did last night and hit them on the break. I can expect us to go for the juggler straight from the start.
Yeah.
Try to get a goal up and then maybe sit back, because that seems to be the style of play that we're doing this season. You know, we're going out there early, first 20 minutes, hit them with everything we have, get the goal, and now that we scored the goal, we're like, oh, well, look, if you want results, you're going to have to come at us.
Mm.
And if you come at us, we have the attacking capabilities to take you out. Because that's where it seems to be going. So that's what I expect to see against West Brom. I don't know much about West Brom. I haven't really watched them under the new manager a whole lot, to be honest with you.
Mm.
Like, I know Long has gone from them, from Hull now, and so I'd expect an easy victory there, really, to be honest, on Sunday, 3-4-0 easy.
Wow, okay, that's nice and positive. Niall, would you concur with that? Pretty much the same lineup.
Yeah, I think we'll go the same again. I think I don't think Rodgers will risk Allen, because I think Allen could play against Arsenal in the league game at home, so I don't think he'll risk Allen yet.
Mm.
I see no reason why we should change. I mean, as I said already, West Brom, they're not great at the back, and that's our strength at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think we might just set up the same against Everton, look to Gerrard and Henderson sitting back, and then look to hit them on the break.
So basically what you're saying is you can see a counter-attacking style being employed there.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think that's the way we're going to go, because, of course, if we bring Allen into the team, it means one of either Coutinho or Sterling missing out, but I don't think Rodgers is going to leave either of them out at the moment, because they're so important to our attacking style. So I expect us to go the same 11 again.
Paul Brennan, I know you've done a tremendous amount of research on this. and that's what we call setting someone up. I know you've done a tremendous amount. So, how do you think we're going to look? And would you concur with this idea of we'd probably hope to score early and then sit back and hit them when we can?
Well, that's the kind of issue, is how we kind of, are we going to do the same against, because of like West Brom and Everton, like, you know, it's not going to go work as well, I don't think, to sit back as deep. So it's how we kind of transition. It's going to probably be the same two centre-backs with Gerrard in front of them, and how we get the balance between the complete shit fest that happened with Villa and then the more compact kind of effort we had. Yeah, basically.
Lovely.
The kind of compact way we played against Everton. I think we're going to, it has to be somewhere in between where we are. I think we're going to have to be a bit more adventurous, you know, kind of, well, more proactive anyway. But I think we have to kind of get the balance right and make sure that, like, we're not kind of all at sea at the back, like against Villa. Like when we were talking about the defence, like Skirtle and Touré did, like Skirtle played well and Touré did okay. But again, like we said, it was a real kind of, it was set up for the defence to play well. Whereas against West Brom, this is the big question. Are we going to push on a bit more?
Yeah, yeah. Dave Thomas, is there a danger of a shit fest? Because we're going to be psychologically troubled by the lack of transfer dealing and new recruits, which we all hope are coming in, and which our players might be psychologically frail enough to be affected by. Is it going to be an issue in the game to come if nobody's in?
No, I mean, first of all, it's West Brom. We'd fucking kill him. I mean,
okay, I love this. Yeah.
I mean, it's Jonas Olsen versus Suarez. I mean, you know, that's the game, right? So I'm not really worried about West Brom. I think we'll kill him. That front four, you know, with Coutinho in the hole, I think it'll be a slightly different game. I think they have Jakob and Malumbu who sit a little deeper. So Coutinho might be a little bit more under pressure. But when you've got a front three like that, I'm not worried about West Brom. In terms of the transfers, look, I think the only people that lose their shit over transfers are fans, right? You know, I think the transfer window makes people crazy, right? Me included. We're all crazy about it. We're all on there all the time. Christ, why aren't we doing this? What are we doing? What are we doing? But if you're a player, signing a new player means that someone in that team is not going to play anymore.
Yeah, but there's also the boost to the team and being around a winning team. Dave, every war movie you've seen, the boys are coming back, they're battered, their arms are hanging off, their arse is falling off. And then you see the new boys coming in their lovely, clean hats, and they're going to go and take over and give them a bit of a boost. I mean, it's just a psychological thing. Do you not think that's going to affect the players at all?
I don't. Well, maybe. You know, yeah. I don't think it has to date. I think, okay, first of all, I think we'll make a signing. So I'm not too worried about
it. ITK.
You know, no. Second of all, I think that what Rodgers has done a great job on,
yeah,
is the mental strength of that team, right? And I think that there is, if they are affected by a signing or not signing or missing out on some player who goes to Chelsea or whatever, then I'd be really, really surprised if that affected the team. Because if you look, even in the disappointments we've had, you know, in games where we've lost or where we've drawn against Villa, the mental strength of that team coming through that is so significant now that I would be absolutely amazed if something like transfers affected them.
Yeah, yeah. Molly, it would be remiss of us to go past this topic without speaking to yourself on the idea of reinforcements or not reinforcements. Where do you currently stand on this?
Well, I think we need reinforcements. We have 15 fit players at the moment. I know there's some coming back, like Sacco's still about 3 weeks out, Edgar's a couple of weeks out. I think we need players in. And I know Dave there made the point that, you know, if we don't get anybody in, at least players will know they're still playing and so on. I think that's a bad thing. I think you need players in there to be challenging for their spot. And the players themselves want that. You know, they want other guys to come in and challenge them for their spot, to push them on. You don't want guys relaxed, go, oh yeah, well, I'm definitely playing this week anyway because there's nobody else in my position here.
Yeah,
we don't want that.
Glenn Johnson's a perfect example of that, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I definitely think we need at least two in. You know, three would be great, but if we got two in, you know, I know they're looking at that wide midfielder. I can't pronounce his name, so I leave that up to you.
Yeah,
the corner, we'll just call it.
Connor Plankey.
But I think you need another midfielder.
Connor Plankey from Sligo, I think it is.
That's Connor Plankey, we'll go with that.
Yeah. But it's not wishful thinking at this stage, Molly. I mean, with the amount of hours literally that are left at this stage, are we basically pissing in the wind hoping for two recruits?
Well, it is worrisome, isn't it? Like, it took us 2.5 months to nearly get a deal with Salah before Chelsea came along with cut forwards and talking.
Yeah.
So if it took us 2.5 months to try and get Salah, what chance have we got in 2 days to get this guy?
Exactly.
You know, my only worry, and I'm not saying they are doing it, but are they trying to save face by going, oh, look, there's a couple of days left, fans are getting anxious, should we just try and get somebody in?
Yeah.
I hope that's not the case. I hope they are actually out there and trying to get this lad in and going full pelt. But I ain't confident. You know, it's after our debacle of the summer between McTiernan and William and Costa, and now Salah in January. You know, fans aren't confident of signings coming in, so I'll just wait until I see one leaning against the wall, and I go, yeah, it's done now.
Paul Brennan, is Champions League football dependent upon getting new people in, or would you be a little bit more hopeful than that?
We've done okay without the new people. Obviously, obviously the injuries are kind of happened, it really kind of put a point on how thin the squad is. I think if we're lucky with injuries, then we can do it without it. But obviously, if we did bring in one, maybe even two players, like, then it would make a big difference. I'd say we're nearly nailed on then with the kind of, because I don't think Spurs are going to last with that form under Sherwood. And United, they've signed Mata, but he's brilliant, but I don't think he's what they needed necessarily. So yeah. I'd say if we did get two people in, I'd say we'd be nailed on. One person as well would happen. I don't buy into the fact, this kind of opinion, that we don't have a chance if we don't bring anyone in, because I think we've shown that we can beat anyone. Well, we just need to keep the brain farts basically to a minimum.
Yeah. Well, as it stands, without signing a player, assuming Spurs lose tonight to City, with our goal difference, we're effectively 4 points ahead of Spurs, 5 points ahead of Everton, and 7 points ahead of United, right? Assuming the goal difference counts as an extra point.
Yeah.
So you can't say that we're going to rise or fall dependent on the fact of whether we sign someone. There's going to be a lot of factors that come into that. Signings obviously help because the squad is thin. Molly's absolutely right. You know, if you've only got 15 players, then that's going to limit the amount of options you've got. But, you know, I don't think we should be lacking confidence at all based on our transfer window. It's disappointing not to sign players. Everyone loves to sign players. You know, the solution to everything in football is new players, new managers, new tactics, new defensive coaches, whatever it is. But I think Rodgers and the team has shown, you know, if you look at their form over 14 months, they can perform at a top four level with this squad of players.
So yeah, well, so there's a serious atmosphere of confidence in the bunker here this evening. Niall, how important then, if given this feeling of hope that we have, how important is it to go on and win on Sunday? We're as the lads are saying, 6 points off Arsenal now. We've made that up in the past. Can that kind of amount be clawed back for a second time in the season, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. I think that game yesterday has given me even more confidence. I actually fancy us to finish in the top four now, to be honest. Even, I don't think it's dependent on signings. I think it's more dependent on getting our injured players back. But, obviously the West Brom game is important. But I can't see us slipping up against West Brom. I think the Aston Villa game caught us all by surprise. We were just after coming out of a great victory against Stoke City. And we were probably even us as fans, we were overconfident. going into the Villa game. But I can't see us making the same mistake twice. Rodgers, you know, Rodgers will drill into their head. It's a massive game in many aspects because we need to be going into the Arsenal game just 6 points behind them. Then who knows? Beat Arsenal at Anfield and suddenly it's down to three and it's game on again.
Yeah, for sure. Phil, I know you've got a couple of thoughts on this particular thing. Is that gap clawbackable? Are we looking at basically better than fourth, even possibly?
I said to you this morning, Trev, that for me, forget titles. Just forget about winning the league. Forget about everything at the moment, right? Mm. The target for me is Arsenal. That's quite simply. We should be looking at Arsenal and saying we can finish above Arsenal. If we can finish above Arsenal, then wherever we finish is brilliant because that's going to guarantee top four, okay? Mm. We have to get past Arsenal, City and Chelsea to win the league. Now, that's three teams to, you know, that you're hoping will have a bad run of form and allow you to catch the points. So 6 points off Arsenal. It's Arsenal to come to Anfield and Arsenal to go to other places in a very difficult month they have. We could be four, maybe 2 points, even a point behind them by the middle of March, all right? So for me anyway, I see Arsenal is the target. That means going into West Brom this week, because what Arsenal are really good at is they'll turn West Brom over. They'll turn all the teams that we've been turning over, but they won't have the mistakes like an Aston Villa. Now, I know somebody's going to say, but sure, they lost to Aston Villa at home, blah, 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 blah. But they tend to have less mistakes. That's why they're 6 points ahead of us at this moment in time, right? We do our business. We can catch Arsenal. If we finish above Arsenal, we're top four. It doesn't matter where. If we finish above Arsenal, we finish third. At least, at the very worst.
Is it not a touch cavalier to be writing off United now with whatever input Mata has, with Van Persie back scoring, with Rooney back scoring?
We match United results from here to the end of the season.
Yeah, I know, we finished.
They can't catch us. But for me, I think last night now is a defining moment for mentality-wise for the team. They went into a game where they dropped points against Aston Villa, and had we gone into the run of three games of Villa, Stoke and Everton at home, and you say you get 7 points out of that, you'll take, because that puts you over the 2 points average per game, right? Mm. What we've ended up with is that with the pressure was on us to win the Everton game to maintain that 2 points per game ratio, right?
Yeah.
Now I'm looking at saying, okay, we've done this. If we've done this, then it's on. If we maintain this 2 points a game, we look at the next three games. Arsenal is the big game in there. We win the other two around it. You could actually theoretically go in for top four purposes. Now, I'm not saying catching Arsenal and take a draw at Liverpool at home and Anfield and beat the other two, and you've got your seven, you've got your 2 points per game average again, right? Mm. But if you go in and you take nine from that, it means that you've closed 3 points in Arsenal at the very least, which means there's only a 3 point difference between you and Arsenal, and that's what I'm looking at. I'm saying, let's stop looking behind us. Let's look in front of us and say who's the most realistic target of those three that we can logically catch in this run in now. It's a run in. We're 23 games now at this stage. There's 15 games.
Yeah,
less than a quarter of the season to go into to where we are.
Fuck yeah, higher than a motherfucker.
Okay, well let's try and focus our attention back again to the game at hand. We've kind of, I think it's fair to say, isn't it, we've looked at the lineups in terms of the discussion we've had so far. Well, unless people
want to. The only thing I'll say is that West Brom, similar to Everton, have been struggling to score goals, right?
And yeah.
They may make a couple of signings before the window. The whole run of this is what happens on Friday, before the transfer window closes. Airmatch isn't until Sunday. If they get them registered in the time, if West Brom do dealings early, they may have something up front, which gives a buzz to their fans, and then that gives us something to deal with in front of us. How Pepe Yal sets up his actual team, I'm not quite sure, right?
But Pepe Mel Gibson, you mean?
Sorry, go on. But how he sets up will probably depend on who they've signed or what their actual players are. They have threats. Their main threats will come off set pieces, which we know we've struggled to deal with. Am I worried? Not really. Mm. But, you know, let's not stumble in this game. Let's not lose the momentum we have. And the one thing I'd say is, for going back to the bit that we talked about transfers, if we get a player in, right, the buzz that will be there, having beaten Everton and gone out and done some business in the transfer market would be electric in terms
momentum.
Of the crowd.
Momentum.
Momentum, yeah. Yes.
Now, hang on, let me cut across you, because you're the only man in the room who was actually here when we did this the last time for the previous West Brom game. I don't know if you remember that, but there was an awful lot of nervous individuals losing their shit in the room about the West Brom midfield and how they might potentially do us damage.
Yeah, but see, I think the West Brom midfield, the way it sets up and the way it comes to players, your man Pepe Mel is a tactician in terms of how he, I'd say he will want to have a deep midfield against us and try stop us scoring, and they'd be happy to take a point as opposed to coming out against us.
Dave Thomas, would you pretty much concur? Earlier on, you were quite definitive in how we're gonna come out of this. So, is there anything particularly you'd be worried about in relation to West Brom?
I mean, I didn't get to talk about the defence, but I share Phil's cautiousness about the defence. I think if you were to write down preferred, you know, back four, how many versions of it would you have to get to the one that we are currently playing? You know, yeah. We'd probably get through 15 or 16 versions of it, right? So it is in no way our back four, and it's always got a fuck-up in it. But you know what? Games are won by match winners, and we've got more match winners than practically anyone in the league. So either the system's going to win it, as in, you know, we're tactically going to be good enough and we'll score and we'll win, or we've got Suarez and Sturridge and Sterling and Coutinho who are match winners. You know, I think we'll kill them.
Okay. So there's a healthy disregard for whatever West Brom have to bring to the table here in this discussion. Let me go to the line and start the predictions. Niall, can I go to you first? How do you see this one ending?
I'm going to go for 3-0 Liverpool. I don't think we'll have any problems. I think we're in good form now. West Brom have already conceded 3 tonight against Villa. So I can see Suarez and Sturridge having fun on Sunday.
Yeah, let's hope so. Molly.
Yeah, I said it on, that's 3 or 4 nil easy one this weekend.
Lovely stuff. Phil Casey.
4-0 to West Brom.
And we're back. Paul Brown.
I got 3-1 to Liverpool and Suarez to get Olsen sent off.
Excellent. Any theories on how he's going to do that specifically?
Olsen's a fucking idiot.
Yard dog.
Basically.
Yard dog.
Yeah.
Horrible prick, yard dog.
Yeah, so hopefully you will.
Jonas own Olsen.
There's a shout. Dave Thomas, prediction.
I think we'll score at least 5, and I think
fuck me. No, okay.
And I tell you, let me add something to that. I think Suarez will score a hat trick. I think his scoring has dropped off a little bit in the last few games.
It's,
I think,
poor,
he's getting
it, yeah,
frustrated, and he needs.
He's down to one a game now.
He's down to one a game. I think it's about time he stepped it up a little bit and you know, really started to put his finger up. But I think it's made for Suarez against flat-footed centre halves like Olsen and McCauley. I think it's just made for him, and I think we'll kill him.
Steve-O's just texted me to say 3-1 again.
Brilliant. Yeah, I think it's going to be a pretty solid win as well. I'd say 2-3 goals. Okay, let's move on then to our listeners' questions. Paul Brennan, you're an obvious candidate for an anatomical inquiry given the way you manipulate the human body on Twitter. So could you tell me the answer to Brendan Hodgers? He's at Sean J. Pugh. He's asking, how long is flannel's lob on when it's on the soft?
It's never soft.
Flannel priapus.
It's never soft.
Did you like that big word? Did you miss that one?
I know, that was very good. Very priapic. Yes, very nice. Harry Setti on Twitter asks, how would you get through the day if you woke up today as an Everton fan? Jesus, yeah, that's a very good one. Dave Thomas, if you were an Everton fan today, what would your day have consisted of?
Weeping uncontrollably, I would imagine.
Yes.
Or ranting about the injustice of whatever happened, that, you know, whatever they've decided was the reason for them losing last night, apart from the fact we were better, like that, better
the pitch,
that the floodlights were probably not right.
I suppose you said the surface, there was something wrong with the surface.
Incorrect throw in given 3 minutes in or something like that. Butterfly effect, like.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it was the Atkinson derby last night. I'm sure the referee gave a throw in wrong, or, you know, the corner kicks weren't taken from within the right distance from
good,
the flag.
Yeah, good show.
I'm sure Suarez's corner
Suarez stole somebody's lighter.
I tell you, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, that gif, lads. That upset. Oh, yes.
But to be honest with you, waking up today as an Everton fan, I imagine, is the same as most days waking up as an Everton fan.
Fucking tragic.
Next one's from Gray, and he asks, this is a hypothetical question for you, Phil. If you could be a woman for the day, what would you do with your day, Phil?
I dress up as an Everton fan.
Yeah.
I get my hair done, I dress up as an Everton fan, and I go into the away end.
I know where you're going with this.
And then I'd buzz off, being a good looking boy, getting my picture sent around the internet all day long.
By Liverpool fan.
It was a damp night in Anfield.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
It rained goals.
Moving swiftly along. Here's a Michael Owen shout from a Craigor painting. He's wondering, is there any chance that Sissoko was fathered by the same man as Jimmy Traore? I don't know. That's a little bit harsh, I think.
My favourite bit yesterday was, Suarez is running around nutmegging everyone, and Ali Sissoko gets the ball and goes, hey, you know, this seems to be the thing to do. And kicks it off for a throw-in.
Niall.
You mean Ali Traore, don't you?
Ali Traore.
Niall, I'm going to come to you in this one. This is from Anthony at AC Bleach. He's asking, what was the best celebration after a goal by a non-goal scorer or an assister? He shouts for Arbeloa. I think I remember what he's talking about there. But best celebration by the non-goal scorer. Can you think of anything there?
It's hard to think of one on the spot, but if I was to give it to a certain player, I think I'd have to give it to Flanagan, because he's adopted the Arbeloa role now himself. Yeah, he always seems to be the first one jumping on top of the goal scorer or flying in over the piles of bodies. So it's hard for me to pick out one, but I think Flanagan could be a contender.
Fair enough. Molly, who was your favourite Disney princess? That comes from Kaylon Karim. Who was your favourite Disney princess? I know you've got a shout in this from your fella.
Ooh, Fiona from Shrek.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. With that.
That wasn't Disney.
Oh, Jesus, Casey.
Well, DreamWorks, they're taken over by Disney.
Stick that up your bollocks, Casey.
It's not a Disney princess. Do you want me to name them?
Serve the
not that that's creepy or anything.
There's a question here from Derek, and he asks, and it's totally ruined now because Phil Casey has basically told us that he is this person. He says, that girl in the Everton crowd, yes or no, but now that we know it's Phil. Pretending to be a woman.
Everyone is a guy.
If I could be a woman for one day, I'm not whore.
Yeah, but you were talking to our
Phil. If it's Phil, then it'd be a yes, but it'd have to be a rough right.
Paul, best beard in football, again from Caelan.
Best beard in football.
Yeah.
Gerrard's one that he had in the summer. I was devastated he got rid of that.
Yeah, it was looking good for a while.
Yeah, it was. A proper kind of like, scruffy at first, but I think he was really going places with it. So I was fairly disappointed he got rid of it. Got rid of it.
Niall, best beard in football?
Xavi's ginger beard, without a doubt.
It's a wonderful thing, isn't it, in fairness?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm going to stay with you and ask you this one as well, seeing as we are talking about beards. How many times can a man who you're relatively familiar with, and I think that's important, touch your face whilst talking to you before it gets creepy? Just give me a ballpark figure there, Nod.
I'll have to think about that one now. I wasn't really prepared for this question.
I'm going to take the pressure off you and bring it back to Casey, because I've seen him do this the last day with poor Floody, and all it took with Floody was one, and he was totally bent out of shape for the rest of the pod. So what do you think, Phil? How many times could I lean in there and touch your face while I was talking to you?
Depends on what your next move is. If you're going to throw the gob on, as many as you want.
I can't think of a better
I got my hair done last night. I dressed up as an Everton fan.
All right, can't think of a better way to end it than that. Okay, just some admin then. I want to remind you all about the Five Times Guys competition. In association with ourselves, for two tickets to see Jamie Carragher and Didi Haman on February the 27th in Dublin, you just tweet hashtag Cara Daytrip to @TheDayTrippers1 and @FiveTimesCo. The HJC Cup in Ireland is on March the 22nd in Astro Park. Details on our timeline. You can get a team in and give yourselves a chance of winning in that. It's a great cause. There will be a night on afterwards, and I think some of us will be there for that as well. Big thanks, as always, to the wonderful Johnny Rep for our class intro music. You can check out their new single, Give, which is released on the 1st of February. Top lads, and I know they have big plans for 2014, just like ourselves. You can follow all our news and our views on our smart feed @LiverpoolWays. follow that account and you can get some articles, content, and get down to www.beyondthecop.com for some great stuff going on there as well. First here is me plugging myself here, my own writing you can find on the Liverpool Offside, that's at liverpooloffside.sbnation.com most days of the week. Don't forget to follow, subscribe to our particular brand of Unhinged Analysis either on Podbean, iTunes, or via any podcatcher on Android. Also, keep an eye out for the Red Men and the TBT Fuck Jim White Transfer Day special. They're going to go mental. Our own James Owens is on there from 4 to 5. Other previous guests like Mark Simpson also making an appearance. Should be much better than the Sky equivalent with Harry Lynn, that was Carr and all that shite. Finally, your day trippers tonight were Dave Thomas, Niall Sheridan, Paul Brennan, Moley, Phil Casey and myself, Trev Downey.
Downey?
I fucked up my own name.
You going to do it?
Fuck off. I'm not fucking singing Nicki Minaj, man.
What?
I'm not fucking doing that. I think I told you.
Sturridge was meant to fly. Hands pointing to the sky. We scored for 75. Fingers point up to the sky.
If you point that, if you put that in, everybody
will That's exactly what I was thinking.
Feeling my way through the darkness.